Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
That's right, it's political commentary, and we have Lara on the line. How are you, Lara?
Kia ora. Good. Really cold, though. Really cold. Cold, and there's this sort of war thing happening and an election. Ugh.
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack here. I thought, should we start on an international scale? We've got a bit of a war unfolding, don't we?
Yeah, we sure do. So, like, the first thing to flag is that we've had this thing since that's developed since World War II called the International Rule-Based Order.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, legally, there are certain things you need to do in order to violate another country's sovereignty. And that is, like, if the country attacks you, you can attack back, or, like, you have to go to the UN Security Council in order to seek permission for attacking another country and, again, violating their sovereignty, violating their borders, because, you know, the world is organized into these things called nation states, and they have borders that you're not meant to go and, like, say, dispose a leader, displace a leader, or, like, go in and grab oil, or do anything like that. That's just the general international rules-based order. Now, we've ticked along for many decades, generally as a world, following that and falling within the bounds of that. But increasingly, scholars in that space, in the international relations space, and I say this as a New Zealand politics kind of Indigenous politics scholar, international politics scholars and international law scholars are saying this international rules-based order is being undermined and is being undermined by the US. So that's a big kind of red flag for everyone, and something that really has played out previously in Venezuela and is now playing out in Iran.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty stressful to watch it unfold from here. What's the response been from our government?
Yeah, so basically the justification from Trump and from the US for the attack is that Iran's been threatening them, saying that they, you know, and Israel, saying that they want to take out Israel, that they want to, you know, destroy them and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And that plus the kind of long-running regime that they've had, where we know that, you know, Luxembourg's been saying tens of thousands of their citizens have been slaughtered, but yes, that is actually, does seem to be pretty well-established fact. At one point, the leadership even turned off the internet so they could murder a bunch of people. So we know that there's been terrible things happening in Iran for quite some time. So those are the two components of the justification from the US for the attacks, okay, that it's in some kind of self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's this moral justification underlying things. So that's what the US have come out and said. Now, you've seen the kind of traditional allies like Australia kind of jump behind that moral conceptualization, that whole thing that, you know, the US has this rights and so on and so forth, so more cozying up to the US, which has been a bit awkward for Albanese because he is a Labour, leader, you know, and that's the centre-left party.
Yeah.
But in New Zealand, we've seen this kind of very awkward kind of balancing happening. So we've seen Christopher Luxon and Winston Peters issue a joint press release and very, very carefully trying to toe the line, and same with Luxon when he's been doing interviews, of kind of saying that, kind of talking about the moral justification, and then when they're going, they go, okay, because there's, again, that whole moral thing, but then there's that legal thing I was talking about. So whenever they start to talk about the legal thing, kind of backing away and saying, oh, well, you know, like, it's up to the US and Israel to be able to discuss what the legal justification was and whether this was legal or not. So they haven't really, they've come down morally saying that, you know, the Iranian regime was violating human rights and has been doing negative things for many, for a long, long time, and something needed to happen. But then, so morally they said that, but legally they said, oh, so they're just kind of still on the fence about that. And, you know, a lot of kind of commentators have then said, well, you know, did you say lots of words without saying anything? That's Hayden Donnell from the spin-off take. And Helen Clark's been coming out outspokenly and really putting it all on the line. We've seen Helen Clark pop back up and say, no, New Zealand has these values. We need to really defend the international rules-based order. We need a stronger response from the leadership. So, yeah, that's been kind of Helen Clark's general position, that, you know, you can't now, under any justification, really violate these sovereignty norms and the international law.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is naive of me, but it's weird that we live in a world where we're trying to morally justify war, I guess. But well, that's just my view.
Yeah, because, I mean, it isn't necessarily then just about the leaders, right, and displacing a leader or assassinating. A lot of people call this an assassination of a leader, like a targeted attempt.
Yeah.
That sort of thing does often create more damage, more violence, more awfulness for the population that you're trying to say that you're trying to protect. So a lot of people have again pointed to Iraq and Afghanistan almost like 20 years ago now, the invasions there, where a lot of people would have been small children, or in my case, quite young when all of that went down.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually toppling a leader, toppling any kind of dictatorship, and then there not really being much of a plan other than to kind of be on the ground and then install some kind of democracy, that actually leads to a lot of violence, leads to a lot of disruption for people,
yeah.
and a very long time before people's lives can kind of, you know, get back to any kind of normal or any kind of new normal. So that's been the other kind of thing, is that we have these two case studies in recent memory, and a lot of people are arguing that regime change in this kind of way doesn't lead to positive outcomes.
No, it almost leads to a longer fallout than letting it see its course. It's very touch and go at the moment. Do you have a hypothesis for how long this is expected to go on? Do you think it's going to escalate? Do you think it's going to de-escalate?
Well, I had wondered at first if it would only be something that lasted a few days. You know,
yeah.
the leader was killed, and supreme leader was killed, and then perhaps maybe it would wind down then. But Trump had said something about it going on for a few weeks. And actually, we've been looking at this, me and my partner, because my partner's in Europe at the moment, and
we're
going to fly through Doha. So we had to figure out, okay, are you going to spend the money and go through Singapore and whatever? And he ended up choosing that route, actually, because, you know, it doesn't look like this thing's, you know, a 3, 4, 5, whatever it is, day war, that it will drag on.
Mm.
And so really it's like, okay, what is going to happen next? Because there are a couple of other factors here. There's sort of oil, and the fact that oil prices have already gone up and that they're set to go up. And I had a text from a mate in political science being like, fill up your car now.
Yes.
So here we go. Hot tip from political science, fill up your car. But that's because there's also going to be effects on the global economy from this as well, because we know that oil prices are really important, central to so many industries still,
yeah.
even in this day, still central to things like New Zealand and other kind of big companies that rely on fuel.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some kind of economic shocks. There always are in terms of war. We saw that, or attacks, you know, again, the definition of war is not necessarily one of those things that I'm arguing, but any kind of war, conflict, attacks. We see the economy affected. We saw it around Ukraine and inflation and bits and pieces like that. So there will be also these long-lasting economic effects likely. And again, it's hard. It's all, as you said, it's kind of hard to tell what will happen here. But the US is kind of talking that kind of longer-term response, regime change, those sorts of bits and pieces. And in fact, the Democrats are even starting to say, well, technically the president's meant to go to Congress to declare war. Not that technicalities has really stopped Trump
no.
on previous occasions.
No. We'll keep ourselves posted on that one, I think, because, look, it could be a little longer than all of us expect, I believe.
Always hard to tell in these situations, and this will be one of those ones that drags on for many years. And then also what's going to happen in terms of the international community and international law as well.
Mm.
So what's next from the UN? There's another big open question.
100%. Let's pivot quickly to the IPSOS Issues Monitor. Some really interesting things at the top of New Zealanders' minds at the moment. Do you want to talk us through what the findings are in this one?
So we do have an election still.
Yes.
So even when the world is in chaos, we have to remember that it is an election year. And so what we've seen in the Ipsos Issues Monitor poll over the past year or more is that basically this poll, it asks people, what are your top three biggest issues? And then it ranks them and presents the results to the public,
yeah.
to the public, to the media. You know, it releases its reports. Part of that, it then asks who is best placed, which party is best placed to deal with this issue. And so what we've seen over time is National pretty much lose ground in almost every single measure to Labor, where Labor's been viewed across the board, other than Law and Order and a couple of other things like environmentalism, as the party who's best placed to deal with a lot of the issues. This latest poll has shown National regain a little bit of ground, but not in a position of strength heading into an election year. So that's kind of the main top line findings of that.
Mm.
And I think traditionally we expect National to be well out in front on things like the economy and Labor to be out in front on things like healthcare, social welfare type issues. But in this case, we're seeing Labor, I think, is still ahead of National on that measure, but I think National's closed the gap was the reading that I had on it. So really, it's like, what will this show this year? Because this is not a really good start to the year for National, especially combined with, like I was saying, the economic uncertainty that arises when countries go to war.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be, I think, a big factor into people's decision making. One thing that really got me in this poll was that education's taken a bit of a tumble. At least people seem to think it's a massive issue. Do you think that's a result of, you know, policy change working, or is that just a result of, you know, the cost of living being so pressing on people's lives?
We have to think in terms of the government, right? So we've got to think, with this government, you know, like, it's a team of ministers, and a lot of people have said Erica Stanford's doing a good job, right? And that there's certain things that her changes to things like NCEA policy have actually really, like, scratched an itch in the voting public, where it's like, okay, people didn't like NCEA, she's going to do some stuff about NCEA. So there's quite the possibility that for the average kind of punter on the street who gets polled for this sort of thing, that they actually have seen a change in education, or they're hopeful that those things will change, that there will be like more reading, writing and math in school and less cell phones. So that does seem like that things have been done in that area, and they're not, like, nothing's really been screwed up in a substantial way other than the school lunches.
Okay.
So it's quite possible that people are evaluating education more positively, and Erica Stanford is someone who's done some things and is a competent, is a good minister. But again, the cost of living is still an issue. It's going to be even more of an issue, of course, with any kind of global instability, and that is actually just the fundamental thing for most people. But yeah, still, there's areas as well. I think, was it Toby Manhire had written a bit on immigration actually being quite far down the list for people. So there's all of those sorts of issues that are still going to be election issues, but aren't front of mind for a lot of people. Everyone's been saying this will be, you know, one of those sort of elections about the economy and the cost of living and affordability and bits and pieces like that. So I think this tracks that idea really well.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And just finally, I wanted to chat a little bit about minor parties coming to the front. We saw a big Greens win overseas recently, which I think had quite a few people go, oh, wow, minor parties are where it's at. So
It's been quite shocking in the UK and in Australia. So Australia's got some kind of by-election coming up as well. Well, Australia's had a lot of political instability in their opposition at the moment. But we've seen both in the UK, and we're seeing it in Australian polling, that minor parties are suddenly really taking their seat at the front, which is fascinating, because both of them have electoral systems that don't support minor parties in the ways that ours does. So really, what's going to happen in our election, when we see people being very dissatisfied in the UK and in Australia with the major parties, and now we've got our election coming up. So we're going to be a little bit of a test almost globally, a bit of an experiment to see what happens with minor parties when you do have proportional representation. I think, you know, in the UK there's a big electoral reform movement, reforming their House of Lords, which there's so many controversies, especially around the whole Prince Andrew scandal at the moment, but also reforming their electoral system so parties like Reform, like the Greens, can actually take a higher proportion of the seats, because they have that same thing that we had in the 70s and 80s, where minor parties were taking a good chunk of the vote. I think in New Zealand it was in the 20% range for Social Credit, but winning like one of the seats. So they've got that sort of issue over there. So I think a lot of the places may take inspiration from our MMP system. And the real question is, what will happen here as well? Because it does seem like people are dissatisfied with the status quo around the world. And that whole so-called cost of living crisis is really important to a lot of people across countries. So I guess we'll see how our minor parties try to appeal to the public on that.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Lara. That was enlightening. Lots of things going on this year. What a year.
Yeah, what a year.
And it's only March.
This is the thing. When we have Trump in world politics, that has a huge effect on domestic politics. This is like saying that the United States sneezes and the rest of the world catches a cold. So that seems to be what's going to happen. So, best wishes to everyone and best wishes to those who have whānau in the Middle East.
Yeah, our hearts go out to you. Hey, thank you so much, Lara, and we'll catch up next week.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.